Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Now you're most welcome back to the second hour of this special Down to Business, coming to you from Toronto for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year annual CEO retreat. We have a great second hour coming up for you. You'll be hearing everyone from Colonel Chris Hadfield to Kevin Kilbane, and we'll hear more from this year's finalists, including Skin Supremo, Jennifer Rock, and Drone Man, Bobby Healy. Now, he's a New York Times best-selling author, he's a TV host, YouTube sensation, TED speaker, classic rocker, and by this stage, an honorary Irishman. Most of the time we get to interview him when he's in Dublin, but as we're in his home state, it's great to say hello to Chris Hadfield. Hello, Chris.
I'm well, Bobby, and it's not states in Canada, it's provinces.
Thank you for that. Welcome
to my home province.
Tell us about that province. Tell us about Sarnia, Ontario, and even Apollo 11 at that time. What did it mean to you?
It's amazing. I've traveled the whole world. I've been around it thousands and thousands of times. I've been to 100 countries, but I'm now back living in the same town where I was born, as you mentioned, Sarnia, Ontario. It's a lovely small town. It was where oil was first discovered in North America.
Is that right?
And so trying to get the product to transport is the reason Sarnia is there. It was water, getting onto the Great Lakes. So Sarnia has a long history as an industrial town, but over 150 years, it's now just a beautiful town where the Great Lakes, perfectly clear blue water, flows by. The, you know, Blue Water Bridge is right there. It's on the American border. My dad was working there as a pilot, and when I was 9 or 10 in the summertime is when the very first astronauts walked on the moon, Neil and Buzz, and I just looked around and thought, of all the things that are going on in the world right now, that's the most interesting. That's wow. New. That's exciting. That's right on the cutting edge of what humanity is doing. It's our dreams of tens of thousands of years turning into a reality. I want to be part of that. And so even though I was just some little Canadian kid from Sarnia, I made a decision that hot July night that that's what I wanted to do when I grew up.
What was your route to space?
Well, I recognized early on, Bobby, that there's no way I'm going to get to be an astronaut. And so I tried to choose a life that no matter which like floor of my aspirations I had to get off on, it was going to be an interesting life. And I thought pilots, my dad's a pilot, you could lose your medical in a second. You know, sure. You get a piece of metal in your eye or something. So I thought first I'd better be an engineer. And so I studied in university and I became a pilot as a teenager. I wanted to serve Canada. I believe very strongly in this country. So I joined the Air Force and I became a pilot. And part of it was I looked at those first astronauts and thought, how did they get to be astronauts?
Right.
And you're piloting a spaceship and you're testing a spaceship. So probably the best path is to be an engineer, pilot, fighter pilot, test pilot, like they were. And it all sounded interesting. If I was going to be an engineer for the rest of my life or a pilot, those all sounded good. So that's what I did. I joined the Air Force at 18 and became a combat fighter pilot in the Cold War, and then went to test pilot school in America, became a test pilot, and went to university again. And after all of that, got selected by the brand new Canadian Space Agency as an astronaut.
Okay. And that was a big day for you.
As big as it gets, yeah. You know, it's, I don't know what it's like to climb Everest, but you climb, you know, interminably, and then suddenly you hit a rise and you can see to the other side, not just your imagination of what it looks like on the other side, but you're at a watershed. And the day that the Canadian Space Agency phoned me was a real watershed.
Tell us about your first trip into space.
It was only 26 years after I decided to be an astronaut.
Right.
So 26 years of training and self-change and preparation and study. And I was part of a crew going, flying on a Space Shuttle Atlantis, launching out of Florida, going up to help build the Russian space station Mir. You know, just 6 years before, I'd been a fighter pilot intercepting Soviet bombers that were practicing attacks on North America. Here I am 6 years later, and now I'm cooperating, Soviet Union fall apart, flying, cooperating with the Russians, helping to build their space station, and first Canadian to operate the Canadarm, our big robot arm up on the space station. just a quick mission, 8.5 days, just 26 years to get ready for it, but spectacular human experience to leave Earth with a crew of competent people, do something that's brand new, and then safely return.
Is it sort of like project to project? Like, does there always have to be progression?
It depends how you look at your life. You haven't done just one thing in your life, Bobby.
No.
And you might call some of the steps not necessarily a progression, but it is. It's the progression of your life. And in my case, I still feel very much that I am progressing. You know, all the companies that I help run right now and the tech incubator that I run and the 6 books that I've written. And for me, all of those are progression.
Yeah.
And so my 21 years serving as an astronaut felt the same way. From the day I walked in as a brand new baby astronaut, learning a huge amount on my first space flight, and then doing spacewalks on my second space flight, and in between flights, having steadily increasing levels of responsibility. I was the chief of space station operations. I was NASA's director of operations in Russia, lived in Russia for 5 years.
Yeah, well.
And so, always progressing and learning new things. And I feel like I've got this huge toolbox next to me that I've just been adding tools to so that I can crack more and more problems throughout my entire life.
What's your take on the world's relationship with the moon now? Is it similar to the time of like Apollo 8? Like there was loads of social unrest, wars.
Yeah, so there were two superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, and the United States was losing. And so they gave themselves a crazy accelerated task to try and put Americans on the moon before the Soviets could. And incredibly, from the time of deciding, 8.5 years, they put someone on the moon. And in the process of getting ready for landing on the moon, as you mentioned, Apollo 8, which was just around the moon and back. And that's what's just happened with Artemis 2. And I think there's this weird perception that there was some long, rapturous period when everybody in the world was fascinated by Apollo. That's not what it was like at all. The whole world watched for, you know, a week while Apollo 8, and they went, oh, wow, that's a really cool picture they brought back. And then for a very brief period during Apollo 11, it caught everybody's attention. But by Apollo 12, everyone was bored with it. You know, when you just view space exploration and confuse it with space entertainment, of course you're going to lose interest. But that's happening right now. Two large superpowers, United States and China. China is ahead. They've already landed on the far side of the moon with probes and brought samples back, and they are inexorably moving to land people on the moon by 2030. And the United States again is like, whoa, we're got to hurry up and try and do it first and get there before the Chinese do. And also, now it's not just proof, but now it's a territory. And this is, I work a lot of different areas, but whoever gets there first has just historically a significant claim.
Yeah.
And it's really important how we decide to do this.
What are the biggest challenges to life on the moon?
The biggest is air. You can't go without air for 10 minutes. So you have to bring enough air with you until you can start generating oxygen, at least pure oxygen on the surface. The next thing you die with is water. You know, you can't go too long without water. So then you need to bring enough water with you until you can start generating hydrogen and oxygen and water on the surface. And then after that, you need shelter. And then you need power for it all. And then eventually you'll need food.
Right.
So that whole process, we'll bring everything at first, but as soon as we can, we want to be able to harvest what naturally occurs on the moon. And we think there are vast reserves of water frozen into the permanently shadowed craters. That would help a lot because water is just hydrogen and oxygen.
Yeah.
And the oxygen we can bubble out and breathe. The hydrogen and oxygen we can mix together as fuel and drink it as water. So we're hoping it is what all our sensors have told us. And then eventually, once we've got a habitat and power and water and air, then we'll think about farming and just living there. But we're just in those early stages of that right now.
You have a lot of records, but is it fair to say that you were the first social media astronaut?
Well, I don't know. There are others, but it's been millions and millions of people know more about the space program. They recognize it as interesting as a result of using technology to share it. But I was so hugely influenced by how the Apollo astronauts shared their experience. Yeah. I wasn't that much by the Soviets because they didn't share it. You know, it was all secret. And so I think I just resolved, hey, if I ever get to do something like that, I'm going to use whatever technology exists to try and share it as best I can.
Chris, can I ask you about your love of music and bringing music to space? Because what you've done, the David Bowie stuff, it's been hugely entertaining, and it's just been a real pleasure to watch.
I've been a musician my whole life, singer, songwriter. I've fronted lots of bands. I tour with bands. I co-write with lots of bands. I've played in pubs. You know, I played in Cobblestone 3 days ago.
Good man.
In Dublin. So just because you leave Earth doesn't mean you're going to stop being a musician. And in fact, there's a guitar permanently up on the space station just for psychological support. And so, of course, while I was up there, I played it, you know, for parties and birthdays and everything.
Brilliant.
But then I thought, while I'm here, I should write music. This is an unusual place. And so I wrote a whole album and recorded, just using GarageBand, recorded an album, and then did a version of Space Oddity with David Bowie's permission that he absolutely loved and hundreds of millions of people have seen. So, but I you know, it's, to me, that's just one more way, almost like a different language of a way to share what you're thinking and what you're feeling and what it's like to live on a spaceship. And so being able to share it musically and take advantage of all that technology, I think was just lucky circumstances that I was there then.
I want to just talk to you briefly about Ireland, but the connection is it true that there's Matt Malloy's flute has made it up to outer space?
One of my longtime friend astronauts, she and I were classmates, hired the same day. We've been in bands together since 92, and she's a good flute player, Katie Coleman. She's also a PhD chemist and a colonel in the Air Force, but great musician, and she's played with the Chieftains many times, as have I, different countries around the world, even from orbit, back and forth cooperatively. And she took Matt Malloy's, one of his old flutes, and then I've gone over to the West Coast and played at his pub. In his pub with Matt. Actually, they phoned Matt and said, hey, Chris Hadfield's here. And so he like got out of his pajamas and put his pants on and came in and we sat and played. But music is everywhere on Earth, and often a place will influence music. And so I'm really curious how the space station, but eventually settling on the moon, is going to slowly modify and evolve a different style of music in a new place.
Finally, can I ask you about your relationship with Ireland? Ireland loves you, and hopefully it's mutual.
It is. I love Ireland. My daughter's a professor at Trinity, and she did her PhD there as well, so did her husband. And so they live in Ireland, my wife and I are in the process of buying property there so that we can spend... We have a granddaughter there now, too. No greater magnet than a granddaughter.
That's it.
And so, as a grandparent, we don't want to miss her growing up, our Irish granddaughter named Wren, W-R-E-N. And
beautiful.
So I was just there this week, and we'll be spending a significant part of each year in Dublin, which I'm greatly looking forward to. And I hear the flying weather isn't always perfect there, but I think it'll be okay.
Thanks for joining us, Chris. It's been a real pleasure to meet you.
My pleasure, and enjoy your time here in Ontario.
Thank
in
you
Canada.
So much.
Thank you.
The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Okay, folks, we're here at Niagara Falls. We're out on a boat here right underneath the waterfall. There's 3,000 tons of water a second coming over the falls. This is the waterfall that connects Lake Erie and Lake Ontario. A guy drove a golf ball across the falls last week, famous for a woman in a barrel called Annie Edison Taylor. In 1901, she survived Niagara Falls, coming across it in a barrel. Now I can tell you that we're getting absolutely soaked here. Waves are breaking over the boat. It's wet, it's cold, it's miserable. They get 12 million visitors a year here. The Cliffs of Moher gets 1.5. That'll tell you, we're all here. We're wearing our ponchos. We're like tourists. We're drowned rats. This is Niagara Falls, folks. Now I'm here in Toronto as part of the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Annual CEO Retreat, continuing to meet the inspiring finalists that we have this year. I'm going to introduce you to three people now. They've all been first movers and innovators in their area. Welcome to the show, Laura McCarthy of Drink Botanicals Ireland. Also welcome Bobby Healy of Mana Air Delivery and Jennifer Rock of Skingredients. You're all very welcome to the program. We might start with you, Laura. You have a fascinating business in botanicals. Maybe tell our listeners all about you and your business.
Yeah, of course. Thanks so much for having me here this morning, Bobby. I started Drink Botanicals Ireland when I was studying business and marketing in TU Dublin. I was visiting lots of bars and restaurants. They're all serving these goblet-style glasses with juniper berries, hibiscus, you name it. There were so many gins and off-license, tonic, water, but there was no botanicals to infuse and upstyle your gin at home like you would in a bar. So I approached my local off-license, Redmond's in Ranelagh. I was just about 21 or 22 at the time and asked him what
to
do.
I used to buy six packs there many years ago.
And I asked him what he thought of the idea. He said, look, Laura, I think this could really work. People are coming in and they can't upstyle their drink at home. So I went home that afternoon and called my cousin, Aisling. She's a graphic designer. And I said, here, can you help me here? I have this idea I want to bring to market. She came up with the prototype and went on a week later, packed all the juniper berries at my kitchen table, went back up to Redmond's. And I remember walking in the door and he just started laughing at me. Didn't think I'd do it, I suppose. And look, he said, sure, give us a dozen and we see how they go. And about a week later, I see my phone was ringing and I said, Jimmy Redmond's. And I thought, Jesus, something's gone wrong here. Someone's complained. And he said, Laura, we're after selling out. Would you mind dropping us up more? That summer, I was actually meant to go traveling to Thailand with all the girls from school. And I remember putting in the WhatsApp group, I said, girls, I'm not actually going to join you. So I want to bring this business idea further.
Work got in the way.
That's it, absolutely.
And well done,
an
you.
Opportunity. So I got in the car and drove around all of Ireland that summer. And I suppose we got lots of stockists. And then COVID hit. And it was a huge opportunity for our company in terms of
everybody making cocktails at home.
But also enabled us to diversify in a way that export opportunities. We launched in the UK, all of our dried fruit. We have over 60 products now. So the first product is very irrelevant to the business. We then launched a range of natural-based syrups, so an accompaniment to the dried fruit. And I suppose, look, we went overseas to the UK, got huge traction there, distributors. And then we launched in the US, which was huge for the company. We're the third bestseller in our company, or in our category, I should say, for 3 years in a row. And look, we're growing year on year and just have entered into Canada last year. So
right.
It's so exciting. Delighted to be here.
What a great story. What a great story. Jennifer Rock equally has a remarkable story. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Great to see you here in Toronto. And great to see your business going from strength to strength. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
So my background is that I'm a skincare therapist. I have been for 20 years. I suffered on my own skin as a teenager, so I was kind of severely bullied, I suppose it's fair to say, in my teen years, which makes me really realize that skincare isn't just a science, which it is, but it's very much debilitating and emotional. It has a psychological implication. So I kind of bring you then to my 18 to 21 years of age. I decided to study beauty therapy and I made it a life mission to really dedicate myself to the skincare side of it because of that emotional piece and that I had experienced. So then, look, I decided to track the world, as you do. And I worked across the UK, South Africa. I worked for American-based companies and an awful lot in the UK. And that gave me a huge insight to the sector on a whole that perhaps I wasn't getting that insight to in Ireland at the time. So I worked in compliance, marketing, education, and then I decided to set up the Skin Nerd, which was my first business. So it's essentially like an online e-retail site where it's a clinic in the sky, if you will.
Right.
So the goal is that we are there to educate you on what to use, what not to use. And Bobby, when I launched that, it became so apparent to me that accessibility was such a huge demand for our clients. So we could carry out consults, which we still do to this day, with people that are breastfeeding and can't get into a clinic, or perhaps they're working late and they can't get into their local salon. So that's phenomenal. But what became even more apparent when I launched that business was that our clients wanted affordability, that clinical advice, but they want to be able to go to it in their locality.
Right.
So that's why I created Skingredients.
Right.
So the name Skingredients, I hope, suggests it, right? It's all about ingredients for your skin. So it's like a capsule skincare collection that everybody in this room, no matter what gender you identify as, absolutely needs. So it's the key ingredients for skin health so that you can unashamedly feel so brilliant in your skin, because the skin is an organ.
Great. Well done. Bobby Healy, a man I know for many years, Mana Air Delivery, the drone man, as we call you, Bobby. You're known to many. You also probably visited Redmond's in Ranelagh as well. But
I did, for an agon.
We won't talk about that. Tell us about how Mana came about and your journey to it.
So Mana is solving a problem where it's just extremely expensive to move goods around communities, suburban communities particularly. So you know, the food delivery driver, the post, the parcel person, all these things. It's extremely expensive to do that, and it cuts off a lot of commerce and lends itself towards people just buying from Amazon, buying your book from Amazon, buying your hardware, whatever it is, because of the cost of delivery. And it's not a big stretch to see how a drone, electric flying aircraft, can do that job of moving goods around. It's not a stretch for me, because I'm a tech. And if you then map that onto the size of the opportunity, there's just food deliveries alone in the UK, 1.4 billion a year, 6 billion in the USA a year, and losing money in a lot of cases because of the cost of labor, the cost of the car, all that stuff. And then if you look at, I live in suburbs of Rathfarnham. It's nearly impossible to get a food delivery there at night on a weekend. Just doesn't work. It's a broken system that only the desperate use, because you're getting your chips freezing cold, and the guy's got COVID and he's eating some of your chips. All the usual bad experience things.
I don't live in Rathfarnham.
Yeah, but very good chips in the end. So that's it. The dream is to be a world leader in that, and with a big focus on the USA.
To stay with us, Bobby, because I want to talk about self-doubt. In other words, when you come up with an innovation, as you've done, first mover, you know, you're as you say, you're a tech guy, you're ahead of the pack. When people say that'll never work, does that drive you on?
No, I feel sorry for them. Any investor that said no to me, I always felt very sad for them afterwards. I've never had a single doubt, because the science stacks up, the unit economics stack up, the capital economics stack up. The only question mark was, is Ireland the right place to start the company and to scale it? Which Ireland's not easy to in certain areas to do business, but in this case, it's probably the best place in the world to build a business. The really strong regulator, really strong regulation, shit weather, everything you need to test.
Does so regulation, though, is that probably the greatest barrier to progress?
It is for everybody else, not for us. We're 8 years old now. It's taken us really effectively 8 years to get, you know, the product at a state where it's fully regulated, ready to scale. And so we're not pulling the drawbridge up behind us, but there's only four companies doing this. It's Amazon, Google, ourselves, and Zipline, another US company. And we're successful, obviously in large part because of ourselves, but also because of the environment in Ireland for doing aviation. It's just a great environment to build in.
Yeah. Jennifer, back to you. You started with the mitt, the skin mitt, and then you evolved out of that. Wasn't that your... And did you have any self-doubt at any stage?
Oh, good. It's such a good question. So the Cleanse Off Mate was the first product, which was an absolute epic and disastrous fail. So I had invested my entire life savings about 8 weeks out before getting my first ever mortgage. And the opportunity was going really well. The product was selling in retail, and ultimately between the jigs and the reel, I hadn't signed a contract. The distributor at the time saw the opportunity and they decided to create their own product in lieu of mine. So I had 40,000 mitts in every single person's garage, attic that I could possibly find. So I think emotionally that was probably the hardest time in business for me. There's no denying it. I think when you lose your first original family home, and my son was 10 at the time, there's definitely an awakening and a learning where you're thinking, I have to surround myself with the right people. I need to understand legals. I genuinely need to understand business so much better. So that probably gave me a lot more hunger and appetite and a drive beyond anything else. So to answer your question, I suppose the Cleanse Off Mitt was the first time I probably really doubted myself. I would say it put me back in terms of confidence, but it did make me more, I said there was just a desire to succeed, to show to myself, yeah, and never mind anybody else. And then everything else comes, knowing the sector, understanding the opportunity, what's the potential. And right now our sole focus is to keep that self-belief, but ultimately to export and to grow beyond anything that has ever happened, yeah, in Ireland, in our sector before.
Laura, you've said that when Mr. Redmond called you, you thought it was a problem. You didn't realize he was calling to order more stock. Did a lot of people say to you, including your friends who were going off to Thailand or wherever, and you weren't going to, they tell you you were crazy?
Yeah, look, I suppose everyone at the time thought I was a bit mad.
Who's crazy now, says you.
That's it. But I suppose, look, when we launched that product, it was the first product, the gin fusion kit, it was very successful. But I knew we had to diversify and go elsewhere. The gin market was booming, but then it slowly started to decline. So we innovated then into other products. But I suppose when you see that kind of, when you're looking at market trends and stuff and knowing you have to move, you can kind of get kind of, how would you say, a bit of a fright and figure out what's next, what are we going to specialize in. So I think it was definitely needed for our company to kind of go into the dried fruit, lemons, limes, passion fruit, offering those bartenders and consumers a solution. Always thinking ahead. And I think it's so important to be out in the market as well, figuring, yeah, out what people want, what's next. I remember Pat Rigney was at an event and he said, if you want to grow your business, you have to be out in the marketplace, seeing what people want, because if you're not, you're just going to fall behind and a competitor is going to come in. And I suppose building those relationships as well with customers is essential to kind of know that they're if another competitor came in, they know you guys, like we at Drink Botanicals, have a solution for them and a portfolio of a lot of products.
And is your strategy then to develop more products for the same audience or to look for different audiences?
Look, it's funny you say that, Bobby, because originally the product was developed just for cocktails and mocktails, but we then kind of figured out, like we do all of Avoca's Head Bakery, all their dried fruit for all their baked goods. So it just kind of shows how, I suppose, unique the product is, but also versatile. So it started with one thing, but now we figure out that people are using it for like food service and infusing teas. We've now gone into matcha powders and that kind of wellness section. So there's huge opportunity for, yeah, Drink Botanicals, and I really think it's just the beginning. It really just started to kick off during COVID, and we moved into a new unit in Crumlin Business Centre, which has enabled us to scale. Started a small little shed in Ranelagh, and look, it's been an incredible journey, and I'm really excited for the future.
Jennifer, you've built this business, your own business now, Skingredients, to a fairly successful level. I know you also use your own personality to drive the business. You're very active on, you know, media contributions around skincare and that. How important is that as a driver of the other side of the business?
I suppose for me, it's how do I describe this? I suppose our reality is that I adore the sector. I'm probably the most passionate person in, I would say, arguably in Ireland, in a public space that really wants to educate people about skin health, that isn't a derm or a doctor, and it's just a fully qualified facialist. So I believe that people buy from people. I believe people see that authenticity because I have that credibility, that expertise. For us, it's a really important part. And I suppose there's a huge opportunity. I know we speak so much over the last few days in EOI over at the Toronto about AI, and I really do truly believe that what people want in this day and age is a face. When you're talking about skin, so it's skin to skin, right? So people really want a voice, a thought-provoking leader that can really educate and guide. So that's a huge important part for us.
Great. Last word to you, Bobby Healy. In terms of being, you mentioned some big players in terms of the competition. You were probably the first mover in the space. Is that, obviously it's an advantage, but it also attracts the big boys in, does it not?
Actually, Amazon were the first.
Really?
Bezos said 16 years ago they were going to have drone delivery in the next year or two in the United States, and 16 years later we're bigger than them in terms of deliveries. So the big guys will always come into a space like this, but smaller companies properly capitalized can always outmaneuver bigger companies.
Yeah.
The trick is not to get acquired by them later on. And that for us now is kind of would represent not failure, but a suboptimal outcome.
Sure.
And our ambition is to be the leader in the USA and really take the big prize. And we're going to go not to war, but we're going to go for them. And we've a better product, better platform. We're fully regulated, and the USA markets for us, that's it. That's what we care about, and we've every right to win there. And you know, I would place a small bet on us now if I were you.
Good man. I'll be off to Paddy Power's home. Bobby Healy, Jennifer Rock, Laura McCarthy. Thank you so much for your contribution. Three really good businesses, just showing how innovation and hard work actually gets you there. Well done to all three of you.
Thanks, Bobby.
Now we're here in Toronto, and indeed Niagara, for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year annual CEO retreat. More to come, including Kevin Kilbane. We're here in Niagara by the lake. We've had a wonderful, wonderful week here, and it's my great honour to introduce to Down to Business. He's the EY Ireland Managing Partner, Mr. Frank O'Keefe.
Hiya, Bobby.
Frank, firstly, thanks for a brilliant week. We'll get into what we did in the week in a second, but can I ask you first, why did you choose to bring the entrepreneurs and the alumni to Canada? What attracted you about the place?
Yeah, Bobby, it's a really great question. We've brought our EY Entrepreneur of the Year program all around the world. And we've spent a lot of time in North America, especially in America. We spent a lot of time in Asia, a lot of time in Europe. But we felt that the world was changing at pace. And we could see that the United States of America was changing its relationship with the rest of the world through tariffs. There was a lot of really difficult wars that were taking place, especially with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, seeing what was going on around the world. But we felt that Canada offered a very different opportunity, but it was similar in ways to Ireland. What I mean by that is we have spent an awful lot of time within EY, our entrepreneurs, our government, talking about Ireland being the bridge to Europe. Canada, however, is also the bridge into the United States of America from a North America perspective.
80% of their trade.
Exactly. So the trade, so the actual societal, historical, economic ties between Ireland and Canada sometimes are lost with the focus on the United States of America. So we felt with, you know, the opportunity, the entrepreneurship here, similar sort of larger market, similar sort of environment, quite similar in culture, that this was absolutely the right place to be. It was before Prime Minister Carney was announced. However, that just adds to the magic of what we've had this week.
Maybe remind us about what we did. It's been a really cool week. We were in some amazing places and we've met some amazing people.
Yeah, I think this has been one of these weeks that you'll remember for the rest of your life. You know, we have, with 150 entrepreneurs, are incredible people. And, you know, while they're thinking about their businesses, selling for themselves, building their businesses, they're also selling for Ireland Inc. And we started off with the Irish ambassador's residence. We had Prime Minister Carney came to see us, which was such a unique thing for a Prime Minister of Canada to do. Prime Minister Carney's got Irish heritage, which is very helpful. Gave this amazing speech in Davos, and we spoke an awful lot about the future ties and the expansion of business between Ireland and Canada, and I think he's very focused on that. So that was an amazing start. But we also have had some world-class leaders, speakers, talk to us. We've spent a lot of time with educators around AI, artificial intelligence, the way that's moving the world in the future. We spent a lot of time on strategy and really pushing our entrepreneurs on how they think about strategy in their businesses in the future. And an awful lot around leadership and leading in the new world. Met people like
Chris Hadfield. Amazing guy.
What an amazing, inspiring person. You know, an astronaut who thinks about the world in a very different way where everybody can benefit from that thinking. And then most importantly, Bobby, when you have 150 of Ireland's best entrepreneurs together, the magic is giving them time and facilitating the opportunity for them to share their experiences, you know, the cul-de-sacs they've gone down, the opportunities they have. Then they start to venture together, Bobby. They start to think about opportunities together. A lot of them will go home with new ideas, not just for their own businesses, but to partner with others. And what we're so proud of in the EY Entrepreneur of the Year program with all of that is that the entrepreneurs create value, create wealth, and most importantly, create jobs.
Frank, it's been a brilliant week. Thanks for inviting us, as always. It's been our great pleasure to be part of this for many years. And it just really is an eye-opener to see, you know, the level of access, the experiences that you get on these trips are memorable, as you say.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, Bobby, me saying, especially to yourself and to John, you make the trip magical. You interact so incredibly well with all of our entrepreneurs. You give them that opportunity to share their voice, share their brand, and we're very, very grateful to you and to News Talk for partnering with us.
Thanks again, Frank. Now, he's 110 Irish caps. He's skated his way to love, and he's still a regular and off the ball, even though he now lives just outside Toronto. He also has a very few busy months ahead of him, as Toronto is a host city in this summer's World Cup. It's great to say hi to the legendary Irish footballer that he is. He's a former colleague. He's Mr. Kevin Kilvan. How are you, Kevin?
I'm great, Bobby. Yeah, thank you so much. That's too much of an intro for me, honest to God, Jesus.
And I didn't mess it up. Well, I kind of did. Well, listen, great to see you.
Great to see you. No, great to be here as well, yeah.
So, I joked about love bringing you to Canada, but it's true.
It's very true. I tell people here that, you know, I was involved in a skating show, an ice skating show, and here it's skating, that's it. It's not ice skating. If you mention ice skating here to them, they're like, Jesus, you know what, ice skating. And I tell them about the show, and they look at me like I've got two heads. What do you mean you never even stepped on ice before? This is like part of their very lives here. So they laugh at me a little bit. I skate a little bit now, but it is very true, yeah. My wife's a professional figure skater. So we met and I'm in Canada now, yeah.
What do you like about Canada?
I like the people, I have to say that, and I think it's always a good gauge when you get good sound people, and that's the way it is. I live quite rural.
Yeah.
Out of here, as you say, I'm about an hour and a half outside of Toronto, east of Toronto, and we live in a small town, and you know, great feeling for the place that we live, and we're bringing our children up obviously here as well, which is great. I think it's very, very good for kids to be brought up here. That's the way that I see it. The kids are in the local school to us. We feel as though we've got you know, everything that we need, to be honest with you. So it's a great place, great place. Yeah.
Now, you were going gangbusters on the punditry side of things back in Dublin.
Yeah.
Have you been able to find work out here?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I still keep up with the lads, obviously, and off the ball, and they still drag me on. They're still using me here and there.
But I never leave.
I love it with them because, you know, the off the ball guys did so much for me, and they and maybe a little bit of vice versa. But it was great to be part of that, living in Dublin as well at the time. It was great for me. So when I came out here, I came here just at the start of COVID, so I didn't know what the hell was going to happen along here. And luckily for me, a friend of mine, Stephen Caldwell, who played for Burnley, he played for Birmingham, Sunderland, Newcastle, some might recognise the name, but he finished his career at Toronto FC. So we hooked up and he said, look, I do a bit in TSN here. They do a lot of the coverage of the MLS, Major League Soccer here. And we also do Euros and World Cup. I don't know, you know, you might be interested in speaking to them if they take you down the line. And it went from that and luckily for me, they used me at the Euros in 2020, which was delayed a year till 21 because of COVID. And then I did the World Cup in 24 over in Qatar. And now I'm doing this. I did the last Euro, sorry, as well. And I'm ready for this World Cup here now that's obviously in North America.
It's great that presents an opportunity for
you.
Yeah,
absolutely, yeah.
Tell me your thoughts on the World Cup. What's it going to be like? bits of controversy here about prices and all the usual stuff. But what's your take on it? It's going to be a good event.
I think from us, where we're from, we know everything about the World Cup. We know everything about what it means to us. We've all got our memories of the World Cup. I don't think there's a lot of people in Canada that really have the same sort of memories and the same sort of association with the World Cup as we would do. But I do feel, even as I said before, I'm living in a small town and people by me would all play hockey, they'd play baseball, they'd watch all the North American sports, if you like, basketball and things. Even they are now coming to me. They do actually say to me, are you doing the FIFA thing? They call it the FIFA thing. They don't call it the World Cup like we would do. But there's a real feeling of, I think, where I am, there's a real feeling of, I'm seeing Messi shirts walking around. I'm seeing Liverpool shirts, Man United shirts. You see it over here now gathering a bit of momentum. So I'm hoping it has a bit of a legacy after it. Yeah.
No, it should be. It looks like there's a bit of hype about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like people are ready for it.
What you mentioned about the controversy there, Bob, as well. I think when you look at it overall and you think, look, ticket prices are extortionate. For the general fan coming over here for the prices that's being charged, because in Europe, no one's used to that. Right across the big leagues.
Sure.
And that's the worry that you'd have, that are they really going to fill the stadiums for the prices that they're charging? But I think they're going to be okay. And I think overall, once you get to knockout stage of the tournament, I think it's going to be just amazing.
Let me ask you a little bit about Irish soccer, if I can.
Yeah.
Big disappointment about our non-success, let's call it, in the recent playoffs. What's your take on all that?
Well, I think there was huge disappointment after the huge elevation it probably gave the country, the huge lift it gave the country with Troy Parrott against Portugal and the amazing performance he put in against Hungary. And I think I felt maybe a little bit too confident going into the Czech game, that's what it was. And to be 2-0 up so early in the game, and you know, it seemed like we were cruising to it, really. Obviously to the playoff final that we should have had against Denmark. For us to lose from that position, I think we all just finished it with disappointment. Yeah. But what I would say off it though, Bobby, I think that I left it all with a little bit more hope and optimism, that there's a team now that they've had big days now, and this team hadn't had the big days that we found in Portugal and Hungary.
Yeah.
And I'd be confident that the next Euros, it looks as though we are going to be at the Euros. It'll be unlikely that we're not at the Euros. That's the way it is. So we're going to be at the next tournament. Hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll be at the next tournament. And we look with hope that this team can really go on to the next level and do something special. And that's the way that we all look at it, I think, as supporters now.
Yeah, just a couple of more bits. Just in terms of your own career highlights, and I think people would be very interested in this.
Mm.
We talk about Preston, Sunderland, Everton, West Brom. Now, we're not disregarding 110 caps for Ireland and 66 competitive games in a row, which is an unbelievable stat. But where would you say, what club were you at when you would maybe considered you were at your best?
I'd probably say Everton. I'd have to say that because, look, I think when I was at Preston and even at West Brom, I was actually probably a different sort of player. I was just told, just stay wide, get the ball, go and beat you. A lot more freedom. I think when I stepped up to Premier League level, I quickly realised you've got to conform a little bit if you're going to hang around these guys, because it's too good at that level. And that's pretty much how it went for me. So I think probably Everton. Now, looking back across it all, I mean, nothing beat... I mean, you guys have known me before and you've probably heard me talk in the past. Nothing beat playing for Ireland. It was the pinnacle. Without doubt, playing the World Cup will never be beaten as far as I'm concerned. But at club level, absolutely. And I think for many different reasons, it wasn't just about the team at Everton, it was the people that were around the team and the people that were around the club. And Everton just has a special place in my heart, and I can't shake that off. Everton will probably always be my team now from here forward.
Now, you probably know that our producer, John Fardy, is the biggest toffee fan we
I'm
know.
Only saying that for John, that's right.
Through me, I ask another question. Have Everton any chance of winning the league in the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years, yeah. I'd have to say yes.
But not this year.
But do I really believe it when I say it? And I'd probably say no. I don't believe Everton will win the league in the next 5 years. I think it's been a good season from where we've been in the last few years, because it's been a hard watch in the last 5 or 6 years. With all the investment that went in, probably going back 10 years at this stage now, I think every Evertonian had so much hope that Everton could be challenging at the top end of the Premier League, and it's not worked out that way. But David Moyes going back in has stabilised the team, he stabilised the club, and we don't know how long he's going to be there, but I think he's put the club in back on a footing now. I think as Evertonians, we all feel that the team can go on from here. So I'm looking forward to it anyway. Yeah, but I do believe, I have to say this, but you'd all met Mark Carney in the last few days, and asked Mark Carney. He's a big Evertonian. He's toffee.
He's a huge toffee,
and no one mentioned it to him. So I'm disappointed in that one.
Well,
anyway,
if we'd known that, we might have had another room into him. Kevin, I didn't think when we were coming over to Toronto and to Canada that we'd meet you. It's been wonderful to talk to you. You're a great lad, and we miss you. And thanks for chatting.
I miss home. I have to say, I miss home, but thanks for having me. Yeah, great
stuff.
You're
a top man. Thank you very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr. Sponsored by Bank of Ireland. Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.